Recording. We're just aiming for about a 20-minute interview. This is Chris Scott for CKUT Radio 90.3 FM in Montreal, interviewing Mrs. Marguerite Laurent with the Haitian Lawyers Leadership Network. Ms. Laurent, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. We wanted to talk today, and we understand your organization has been following the issue of foreign mining companies coming to Haiti and prospecting, especially in the north of Haiti. There are now at least three Canadian companies prospecting for gold and copper in northeast Haiti, and two of these companies have really expanded their operations within this past year. Why is there the rush to start mining in Haiti right now, or to start prospecting in Haiti right now in the middle of a recession of all things?
Well, perhaps because right now Haiti is under occupation and the people don't have their voice is not being heard. So this is a very good time for foreign companies to be granted concessions because the folks in office are not representing the people of Haiti.
Mm. And I guess you've talked about the fact that these companies, obviously, they look for what they call a secure business climate for presumably a low regulatory environment. Can you describe a bit more for listeners what the situation is for regulation in Haiti right now? Because Haiti does officially have an elected government, but the country is also under occupation. What happens on the ground? Who makes the decisions? Who calls the shots?
Well, technically, with regards to mining, there's a thing called the Bureau of Mines, and it's under the Ministry of Public Works in Haiti. But what folks have to understand is, the history of what's been going on with respect to Haiti. Between 1991 and 1994, there was a coup d'etat. It was 91 was the first coup d'etat against President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. And in those times, foreign companies, whenever doing coup d'etats, they get lots of concessions and so forth. There, in terms of Haitian mineral rights and gold and bauxite and all of the various minerals of Haiti, I mean, people don't think of those things about Haiti. And this is one of the things that my organization wants folks to understand, that the UN is not in Haiti, the U.S. is not in Haiti, and the Canadians are not in Haiti for humanitarian goals or because they care about Haitian rights. There is an economic track. And so I'd like to be able to explain to your audience that in terms of the economic track, Haiti has various sites, especially in the north, where in terms of Canadian companies, we're talking about St. Genevieve, we're talking about Eurasian Minerals, we're talking about right now the new one that just came in, which is called Majesco. Mm-hmm. Those are the three that we are aware of. That doesn't mean there are not others. Mm-hmm. But around 1970 and 1980, there was a survey, geological survey done by the UNDP, and they actually also put together a document with respect to what is available in these areas, and these areas now that are being mined by Eurasian Minerals, that are being mined by St. Genevieve up in the Tour du Nord, up in the north and northeast of Haiti. Mm. These companies, specifically Genevieve, came into Haiti in 1997, and that was under the Lavalas government under President Tréval. Mm-hmm. And they got a 25-year contract. Now, when they got that contract with regards to Haiti, this was during a time when the grassroots had their voice. They knew what the resources were in Haiti, and they felt entitled to be able to share in the profits. So we have, information where St. Genevieve is talking about how, the Aristide government was not amenable to what it was doing in Haiti. Mm-hmm. But now these companies are having a great time. Once the coup d'etat has happened in 2004, there is no longer a worry about the people, because the people are... their voices are not being heard. Although we have an elected government that was, an elected president, the rest of the folks are coup d'etat folks that have been left over, or they are folks that the parliamentary elections and so forth, where the people really concentrated just on trying to get themselves out of the, between 2004 and 2006, intense repression, trying to get a government that they thought, or a president that would represent them. Mm-hmm. But the Prevost government is effectively, at the moment, a puppet government that's under occupation. So that's why you see the most exploration licenses being given out. We in January, Eurasian Mineral, a Canadian company, got 27 licenses. We know that in 2005, during the La Torture imposed government, after the coup d'etat, that Saint-Geneviève, they reaffirmed their license. Now, in terms of regulations, what should people think about when, if a company says they're having problems with the democratically elected government in 1997, but in 2005, when that government has been ousted, their contract, their 25-year contract, is being reaffirmed, and now they're having a great relationship with the occupiers of Haiti. What folks should understand is this. Now, I don't have the specifics with regards to the Genevieve contract, this Canadian company, but I do know that they have they're up there in the north and northeast, and folks should understand that when a coup d'etat happened, like the one that happened in 2004, and these folks that came in from the Dominican Republic, who are supported by the United States and all of these neocons who wanted to get President Aristide out, the first thing that happens is that all the archives are destroyed. The set fire to all the original archives so that the elites and the foreign companies who may owe money to the Haitian people and the Haitian government, they sometimes get away scot-free when the new imposed government comes on, without paying anything. So who knows what data from the first contract under Préval was taken out with regards to this 25-year contract of Saint-Geneviève. Nobody knows. All we know is that the Saint-Geneviève company reaffirmed its contract under the occupation and added 5 more additional permits. So in terms of regulation, what happens? Nobody knows. There's a Debt Bureau of Mines. I give you an example. One of the head of the bureau is Mr. Anglade, and around that same time, he talked about not mining but companies, but there was an issue where there were underwater exploitation in Ile de la Vache, which is an island in Haiti, and he somehow there was a dispute between the company and the Bureau de Mines, and what happened was, out of the blue, someone somewhere decided to move the contract away from the Bureau de Mines and put it into the Ministry of Culture. So these are sort of the weaknesses of the Haitian regulatory system. Number one, you have these coup d'etats where, what was done when there was a government of the people, we don't know what was reaffirmed in 2005 under the occupation. Mm-hmm. Also, we don't know who is regulating whether the properties are being paid for that these people are excavating under, whether the laws that require that Haitian ownerships are being followed, because a lot of times these foreign companies have enough leverage to just buy a name, a Haitian elite, a person, give them some money, and then in effect, who's going to there's no serious enforcement of those subsidiaries that they have to do that has Haitian participation. Also, do the Bureau of Mine, with the various chaos going on, who is going to look at these contracts and enforce, for instance, whatever the guarantees were that the underground water or the surrounding farming areas or the air pollution of you know, what happens, because everybody knows the environmental devastation that happens with mining, the chemicals that are used in the air. Obviously, everybody also knows the wind level when Haiti has hurricanes, like the devastating hurricane we just had recently that leveled the whole of Guanaive, you know.
Yeah.
You know, what happens when oxidation and all of these various chemicals are you know, get traveled up in the air? Who will be responsible? Will these foreign companies have any responsibility to the health hazards that may be that may happen? Mm. We know, because we are under occupation, that there is, frankly, no regulatory framework that will enforce laws that, or even contracts, and we don't. These contracts, the so-called conventions with the Bureau of Mines, that let's say Genevieve and Eurasian or Majesco have, nobody, the people of Haiti don't know about them.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you.
So that's basically what's happening. I mean, if there's, for instance, a guarantee that once they have dug up these mines and so forth, that they're not going to leave the area devastated, that there's some sort of reparation fixing the area, and if there are some damages, that there's some sort of money put aside for those damages. Nobody knows any of this stuff.
Mm. You mentioned earlier when you were talking that some UN personnel, so peacekeepers, I guess, with the minister, have actually been providing logistical support, and in some cases been providing security to these mining operations in some of these remote areas. Is that true?
Absolutely. You know, we have reports all of the time. We have this project in Haiti called the Esli Danto Witness Project. Mm-hmm. We get reports from the various locals, and the latest one a couple of months ago was in Port-au-Prince,
okay,
where we were told that the UN soldiers came in. Now, I have to say that most Haitians, you know, when they'll call anyone a UN soldier, I mean, if you have a gun, I mean, it could be, you know, some geologist or someone, or private security. But the point is, the UN soldiers come in, they cordon off the area, put big containers in, and folks tell us that they can't see what is being dug. They can't see what's going on. They might stay in that area for a month. They might stay in that area for 2 days. Whatever they're doing, the folks that are the authorities cannot explain to their constituents what's going on. And so that's one of the things that's been happening all over Haiti, all over Haiti. I have an example of somewhere in the north, mm-hmm, a mayor there that I spoke to a while ago basically said to me, you know, the UN troops came into his town, started digging, cordoning off areas, and when he went to them with a delegation of the town people, they said, you know, I don't know what you're doing here. I'm the mayor. I'm the authority here. And they said, well, listen, we have authority from Port-au-Prince. And they didn't produce any sort of paperwork. So do these foreign companies actually have the consent of the people at the moment? I would say they don't, for doing what they're doing.
Is your sense that the laws in terms of environmental protection and protecting communities that are near mining operations, is your understanding that the laws just aren't applied, or is it the problem that the laws don't exist, or do we even know at this point?
Well, the laws exist. Whether they're adequate, mm-hmm, we don't know.
Okay.
Whether they're being applied, that we know they're not being applied.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the people themselves don't know what's going on, and if the people themselves don't know what their rights are or who the folks that are coming in are, then that means, you know, whatever those laws are, they're not, you know, the mayor can't call and said, you know, we you know, this X, Y, and Z law requires that you get in touch with me first, that I know what's going on, that I'm able to protect my people. But none of that happens. So if there, whatever the law is, and I know that on paper there are certain environmental laws that, mm-hmm, Haiti has, but these just like on paper there's supposed to be some sort of Haitian participation, but mm-hmm, you know, it's all window dressing. At the end of the day, they're not being enforced, and as I said, ways of not enforcing it is destroying the archives. so that nobody knows who owes what, or nobody knows, and then redo the data, redo it under occupation, so that's basically it. But folks have to understand that the Haitian people had experiences before with, let's say, the bauxite, where Reynolds Aluminum was in Haiti for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And after it left, the place was just a crater. And the people
what
wanted
are
to talk- know...
What years are we talking about?
We didn't benefit.
Yeah, what years are we talking about for the bauxite?
It was in the 70s.
Okay. Yeah.
It was in the 70s. So now when see, there was an education process in Haiti. For the first time, we had a democratically elected government. And I remember that in 1999, when President Aristide was campaigning for his second term, for the first time, the people were given what this Lavalas party was going to do. And it was called the White Book. And in that book, there was a list of all of the various minerals and sites, and I remember there's five, and it's on my website. There is a map that shows where the various minerals are, so that between 1991 and 1994, when there was the people had a voice in government, there was an intense grassroots movement to figure out how they can use Haiti's resources. There was a plan where the Lavalas government not only told the people where the resources were, but that they did not have the skills and technology to actually extrapolate the gold, extrapolate the oil site. So their plan was they were going to engage in some sort of public-private partnership where both the people's interests would be taken care of, and of course the private interest would take their profits.
Yeah.
But and I think that was around that time we have Saint Genevieve saying they didn't like the Haitian government. Obviously, they didn't like this plan. They don't like the Haitian people to know where their resources are. But in this book, it was the first time in Haitian history where it was done in Creole, and in French, and there was a national discussion all over the radio with respect to these various resources, where they were located, and how the government was intending on trying to build sustainable development through those resources. So that's what you had before the coup d'etat. With the coup d'etat now, though the people know where these resources are because of this book exists, they don't know who these foreign companies are, what their profit margins are, what the environmental protection rules and to protect them are. Many folks, for instance, in the north talk about losing their property, having people come in with guns and taking over their property.
Gosh.
So that's where we are.
Ms. Laura, I mean, you're a lawyer. I mean, I understand work on this full time, and I understand it's a big, big, big problem. But are you able to do something in terms of the lawyers' network? Are you able to go and do access for information requests or something similar? Are you able to actually go on site and get some information or take testimony from people? I mean, how does someone who works on this full time try to shed light on what's actually going on?
Well, number one, one of our biggest challenges is to tell the world that the powers that are in Haiti at the moment are not there to so-called protect Haitians, security.
Yeah.
They are there securing an economic track. They are there trying to secure their privatization, their neoliberal agenda. Their sweatshops and their use of Haitian resources for the major conglomerates and Haiti's oil resources. As I said, five sites, and that's not including stuff that's in water.
Yeah.
And so that Haitians are aware of with respect to their own country. We as an organization spend most of our time actually trying to uncover the information. We have asked the Bureau of Mines for, let's say, the contracts, and we are ignored, obviously. We'd like to see the conventions that has to be signed between St.
We don't get those things,
but we are pushing, obviously, the various political figures that are interested in the people's rights to ask for these contracts, to find out what's going on. So that's one of the things that we do. But the primary stuff is just to establish that Haiti has resources. I mean, the colonial narrative is that Haiti is so poor, it's a beggar country, and it doesn't have any resources that possibly Canada and these Canadian companies could want to go in Haiti and excavate for.
Yeah.
So that's why programs like yours are so important, because we get to tell the world that Haiti has gold. As a matter of fact, there was an article that talked about being littered with gold, that Haiti has copper, that Haiti has silver, that Haiti has all of these various oil sites, and that there, behind the UN guns, something is happening.
Yeah, and maybe you could just tell us, just to make it explicit, the people that you're dealing with, that you're communicating with in the north of Haiti and elsewhere, what are the concerns they have about the way exploitation is being done? I mean, in terms of having their property trampled, I can understand that very clearly, but in terms of some of the longer term, the environmental effects, what have they communicated to you?
Well, the kind of interesting thing is that a lot of the folks, they don't know. They really don't know, some of them, the extraction of gold and copper and so forth has this cyanide process, or this process that's going to, that when it hits the wind, you have all the various, poison in the air that will cause public health. The geologist, the Haitian geologist knows, and they've published papers, and we're working with them in terms of an educational process to let the folks know, all of the chemicals, for instance, that deep in the veins of the rock, when those chemicals go and they seep through, you have this possibility of Haiti is a country that's so fragile already. Everyone knows that the deforestation is a problem. Everyone knows that the last hurricanes destroyed the whole city of Guanaibe, which is about almost 350,000 people were rendered virtually homeless. There was $1 billion in damages, and this is because of the deforestation. But imagine now that you have companies digging into the mountains of Haiti, and leaving these craters and leaving these lethal sorts of illnesses to the farmland, livestock, the water, the air that the extraction process will the leaking cyanide and other chemicals used in the extraction process, will affect nearby farmlands, like in the livestock and so forth. So we don't have any reports yet with respect to those things. As I said, our resources are very limited. What folks have been talking to us about is the UN's coming in and cordoning off areas, or the blanc, they call, foreigners blanc, coming in and setting up their various mining operations. And then that's what we've been told, that we have not gotten information about livestock devastation right now, or because everything is sort of we think things are at a small scale right now. We don't know to what extent that they've actually started their excavation processes, because everything is cordoned off. Haitians can't see in. So that's really all I can say with respect to what's going on. We don't know what's going on inside. All we know is that areas that Haitians were able to travel and go to right now, they cannot go to those areas. And in terms of soil contamination, I can say, though, that we have noticed, and folks in Haiti understand, the difference between 2004, when this coup d'etat happened, Now, as I was saying, you know, we had an empowered constituency of Haitians and grassroots organizations from 1994 to 2004. Mm. And there was sort of an impasse because there was a fight between the companies who had gotten their concessions and then the people. In Congress in Haiti, there was just an impasse because there was big discussion as to, you know, what these companies were going to be doing and how this was going to benefit for sustainable development. Well, there's no such discussion right now. Right now, all we know is that these companies are getting contracts after contracts after contracts, and the places are being cordoned off. And we can see between 2004 and 2008 hurricanes, the actual, you know, granite, the actual mud cake on the people's faces. You can see the difference between the mudslide in 2004 and how much it's intensified in 2008. So we can see the degradation, and it's happening because of this digging up of Haiti. Because in addition to these Canadian companies, there are other companies that are digging up Haiti for construction materials and limestone and all this other stuff. Marble, Haitian marble, is in the international market a very important and it's pure. The purity of these resources in Haiti are so important, or so the grade of them is so high.
Yeah.
Minerals in Haiti, the grade of it is so high because Haiti is one of the oldest landmass in the Americas. So, and because Haiti is a land of mountains after mountains, that's what, you know, IT means. Mm-hmm. You have all of these minerals inside of these mountains. But our concern, of course, is what's going to happen to the groundwater, what's going to happen to the air, what's going to happen to the people, what are the profits, and what a guarantee do the people have that there's going to be any sort of sustainable development beyond some temporary jobs for miners. Because we know in the process of gold and copper mining, they need a lot of water. I mean, Haitians wonder, you know, where are they going to get it from? Are they going to build these dams? Who's going to enforce that there's no big accident like that happened in 2000 in Romania, where, you know, one of these mining companies just leaked out, these chemicals into the river. I mean, the Artibonite River is not that far, and it's where Haiti's breadbasket is. If that's contaminated, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So there's no discussion of any of this in Haiti right now. Whereas under the Democratic government, there was intense discussion of these issues.
If Haiti regains its sovereignty at some point in the future, what is the way forward in terms of mining? You'll still be dealing with these companies, which are very cynical, which try to get the best deal they can and damn the consequences. Will the sovereign Haitian government still have to deal with these companies? Will they try to mine in some way on their own? Will they deal with countries like Cuba, perhaps, who have a different experience with dealing with foreign capital? I mean, what is the way forward from Haiti from here on in?
Well, the way forward, number one, is for Haiti to get back its sovereignty.
Yeah.
And I think there was an intense discussion between 94 and 2004. I think that discussion needs to be put back. That's what democracy is about. Mm. I think that the plans that the Lavalas folks had in their white book, where there's a just partnership between the private sector and the public and the government, so that the skills necessary, for instance, to do safe extraction are applied, and to protect the people are applied, and so with the understanding that a private company is going to want its profit, mm-hmm. but also with the understanding that the Haitian people have an interest. Right now, that the only thing that anybody's dealing with is the profit of the foreign companies. It's nothing with respect to the interests of the Haitian people for sustainable development, for health, for their you know, their rights in terms of their ownership of the property. There's none of that. So we obviously need to get our engagement with the private sector who have the skills and the technology to extract these minerals, but in such a way that the voices of the people are heard, that the environment is protected, that there's guarantees, financial guarantees, that you know, if something happens, these companies will be liable, and they just can't just, you know, jump off and go someplace else and leave some sort of a degradation. But I think you're correct with respect to it's been done. It's being done in different places, and we have to look at those places. We have to look at folks who are friendlier to human development. I think that's what the white book was called, investment in humans and in the environment. And Cuba, Venezuela, and these folks that seem to be interested in their human capital are good partners and could be good partners for us at some point in time. Yes, I think that is a, you know, something, because right now, you know, there's a need, for instance, for fuel in order to run some of these mining companies. What are they using and how are they using it? You know, if we can leverage this into infrastructure for the larger surrounding community, that would be good. Not just like, you know, these companies come in and they built a dam that only they use for their, you know, extraction process and so forth, and the community is left with no development. But if we can have an integrated, holistic system where they come in and there's a development plan for sustainable development, for sustainable economic jobs that are going to be beyond this arena, for water, clean water, for electricity, something where we work in partnership is, I think, what the Haitian people want, what they need. It's not that they don't want to see foreign companies in Haiti. It's just that they don't want these foreign companies to manipulate the so that, you know, every time we take one step forward, they bring us three steps back with the coup d'etat, destroy all of the work that was done that put in some protection for the people, and then go back to just their profits.
Yeah. We were speaking to Marguerite Laurent with the Haitian Lawyers Leadership Network in New York City, I believe.
Yes,
that's correct. Is there anything else you want to add before we finish the interview, Ms. Laurent?
Yes. Well, folks who are interested in really understanding the counter-colonial narrative—that's what we specialize in—and especially we want folks to know that Haiti has resources. That is because of these resources that you have companies like Eurasian Mine and Saint Genevieve and Majesco, and you have, you know, the Ottawa Initiative that basically is being played out today, where the Haitian president is like third or fourth in line in terms of, you know, who has anything to say about Haiti. It seems like the first person in line these days is Ban Ki-moon and then Paul Collier and whoever comes in from the international community that somebody called expert. And so we want Haiti's sovereignty back. We want Haitian resources to be used in such a way that it helps with long-term Haitian development. And we want the folks to understand that there are five oil sites that have been documented with regards to Haiti. We want the folks to understand that there are reports from the UN that says that Haiti is littered with gold and copper and marble and limestone, and that there are various projects going on right now behind these UN guns, and nobody knows what's going on because there's no transparency, there's no representation for the Haitian people.
Okay, thank you very much, and we'll definitely be speaking to you about this sometime in the future. Thank you, Ms. Laurent.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thank you.